Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
These are not my stories, but stories I have been told. 2 by clients, and 1 from a friend. I work for a non-profit charity organization that works with helping the homeless with anything they could need. Showers, food, a mailing address, recovery programs, cab vouchers for appointments and court dates, housing, clothing, you get the point. They have some very scary stories, and they often like to share with others to try and help keep those who are not on the streets off, or those who are not on the road of addiction away from drugs. That being said, sometimes when dealing with addicts and the mentally ill, not everything they say is true. So I'll be careful to only share the stories that I honestly believe to be legit and not made up. I plan to share 3 stories, and if you like them and want more, I have more that I can share. This first story is from a girl who we'll call M for privacy reasons. M thinks it's important to share that she did not grow up in a broken home. No large life traumas or neglect. She came from a good middle class family, and everyone loved each other greatly. Her family did have a zero tolerance policy for underage drinking and drugs, so M always told herself she was never going to do drugs and disappoint her parents. She waited until her 21st birthday to have her first drink. Sometimes bad things happen to good people, and that everyone on the streets has a story that got them there. No one is born as trash and destined to be trash. Em's good upbringing and normal life changed when she was 22. Em was in college going into nursing when some friends had invited her to a small house party. Just good food, some drinks, and hanging out. Nothing fancy, nothing illegal. There she met T. Now, T clearly had that bad boy vibe going, and for some reason, Em had found that attractive. He was very different from any man that she had ever met and really enjoyed the change of pace. Better yet, T seemed to like her as well. They began to date soon afterwards, and their relationship moved rather quickly. Em didn't realize the mess she was in until she felt like it was too soon to get out. It started with T wanting to go out to bars and drink more and more. Then it turned to going into house parties before or after the bar just to have more fun and make memories. He would push her to drink. Em never smoked weed, but the longer she was with T, the more he wanted her to smoke. It was always the same argument. I just love you and I want to make good memories with you. Don't you love me? I'll die if you don't love me. Em learned fairly early in the relationship that T did drugs, but he always promised he was good, that it was just for the fun and he wasn't addicted. That her parents and teachers make the 1 in 10 sound like the every time. Blinded by love, Em believed him. Of course, it wasn't long until T started pushing for Em to try the drugs herself. That is where she drew the line. At first, he was understanding, but as time would go on, he got more and more upset at her denial. After only 4 months of dating, Em had moved in with T. It seemed smart at the time. She loved him and she was going to marry him someday anyway, right? Also, dorm life was expensive, and it made her feel grown up to the women of her man's house. This decision was, and I quote him on this, the stupidest thing I've ever done in my whole life. What kind of dumbass moves in with a guy she just met after only dating for only 4 months? How stupid. T became more and more controlling and threw tantrums when he didn't get his way. He never wanted her going to school, and he got angry that she wanted a part-time job to start saving to pay for college loans. They began fighting a lot. Em's drinking was getting worse than ever, and her grades were really slipping. One night after a particularly nasty fight, Em had decided to drink herself to sleep. This was the first time that T took a syringe and shot Em up between her toes. She slept so heavily from the alcohol that she didn't even notice. What follows seems to be very hard for him to talk about, and she's very vague when talking about it. From what I gather, M thought she was sick and possibly dying from all these weird symptoms that she was having, thinking the marks that kind of hurt between her toes to be athlete's foot or flea bites or something reasonable. She was terrified, and she had somehow convinced herself that she had a brain tumor. It wasn't until she told T that she was going to the ER because she just didn't feel right that he came clean with her. T moved from shooting him up when she was sleeping, to then threatening her life and making her sit and watch while he drugged her just so that she could feel the high with him. She dropped out of college, started cutting friends and family out of her life, and hardly even left the house. Her family had an idea of what was going on, but just couldn't get him to come clean when they did manage to speak to her. She has also hinted at some other things happening, and sometimes would tell me other stuff. But I think I'll leave that out because I'm not really sure and I don't want to share false information. I think if M wanted this bit shared, she would have been more clear whenever she told the story. M admits that even to this day, a part of her still loves T, but she understands that it's from the abuse and conditioning. That's how abusive relationships work. T made her feel like she couldn't live without him, that everything was her fault somehow. That if she just did better, then he wouldn't act how he did. The last time that she saw him was the most terrifying night of her life. By now, Em is willingly doing drugs herself because she hated how she felt without them. Only they were out. T kept promising to go get more, but then wouldn't get off his Xbox. Em is not proud of this, but in her desperation to get high, she unplugged his Xbox and started insulting T for first getting her hooked and then letting her suffer without, and that a real man would take better care of his woman, and that maybe she should go to sleep with one of his drug buddies because he'd get her high and treat her right. Well, T did not like this at all. For the first time, T took a swing at M. She tried to defend herself, but he was just way too strong. After a few punches to the face, he had choked her out. She was sure this is how she would die, murdered by her boyfriend who made her an addict. She woke up in the hospital the next day with doctors telling her that she was lucky to be alive. Apparently, a neighbor walking her dog had heard the yelling and M's screams and had called the cops. M was way too scared of him though to press charges, but the police did. Unfortunately, the naive M who believed her family would always be there for her was in for more heartache as she had confessed everything to them and then begged for help. Her parents and siblings all refused to come see her or take her in until she could prove that she was clean and would stay clean. With nowhere else to go and no one left in her life, Em dreaded being discharged from the hospital, but eventually she could no longer stay. She had spent her first night homeless in a back alley behind a nail salon, using some thrown out rag that she had found in a dumpster to try and cover herself with. I'm happy to report that Em is now clean with a good stable job and her own apartment. She's repaired her relationship with her family and is simply doing amazing now. I couldn't be more proud of her. But her path to recovery was not easy, and life on the streets is brutal. Em gave me the okay to share this story so that anyone out there in an abusive relationship might hear it and get help. Get out. Don't wait until your life is in danger, turns you into something you're not, and leaves you homeless. Save yourself now while you can. The second story is from a couple who we'll call JNS. I don't know much about JNS's backstory. They are a married couple in their early 50s, and honestly are just some of the best people you'll ever meet. They're kind to almost everyone and genuinely want to help. S has a bit of a temper and Jay can be a bit slow to calm his wife down, but what human doesn't have their flaws? I know that they both have a history of drugs, but by the time they came to the program, they were already clean and just trying to integrate back into society. But when you don't have access to clean clothing, a shower, a bed to sleep in, and an address, or a great work history, it can really be hard to get a job, work, and get a place to live. Fortunately, they did own a car that they were living out of with their dog that they had rescued out of an abusive situation. In my town, we have a Facebook group dedicated to being a city watch group. You share important information, ask important questions, and try to function as a community to keep the community safe. Or that's what they're supposed to be. The group has pretty much given up all pretenses of caring about keeping the community safe, and instead turn into a self-righteous, oh holier-than-thou mob that despises the homeless. They cheer each other on whenever someone shares a video of them finding where homeless people are around town and harassing them to leave town and calling the cops to report crimes that the individuals didn't do. They spread lies about the workers at my job and try to get us shut down, saying that if we stop helping the homeless, then the homeless would move to other cities and leave our city alone. They even called out a local youth group that volunteered two Saturdays over their summer break to come fix up some things around the building for us. Such sweet and helpful kids willing to serve and help others. The Facebook group actually said they were evil children doing the devil's work, and also called them names that a grown adult should never call a child. Well, JNS found themselves victims of this Facebook group. The man who started it all, let's call him Evil Jerk, noticed that JNS were living out of their car and how they were always moving around town, trying to find a place that they could stay for a bit. I don't know much about Evil Jerk other than he's retired, comes from money, and how he likes to snoop around town for content for a stupid Facebook group. So I guess he made JNS his target for some reason. He'd post videos from his phone of him running to the couple and asking why jobless layabouts like them were so cruel to force a dog to live with them. He would try to demand Jay's proof of insurance for driving. He accused them of a lot of terrible things and single-handedly caused some strong PTSD in S. She still jumps and screams if you knock on her car window or whenever she hears glass shattering. They have no proof, but we all know it was Evil Jerk who attacked them at night. They were sleeping in their car when someone at about 2 a.m. wearing all black and face covering started busting out their windows in the car, yelling that people like them should just die, and then ran off when Jay jumped out of the car with one of those heavy-duty flashlights the security guards normally carry. Jay and the dog had minor cuts from the broken glass, but S, who didn't have any shoes on, was very confused waking up to all that. She ended up stepping on a piece of the shattered glass and cut her foot very badly. They did their best, but the cut kept getting infected. Eventually, S had to have two toes amputated because the infection had spread so badly. Jay made several police reports, but without proof, there was nothing that could be done. S says she was just thankful that the insurance fixed the windows and paid for the surgery, but that she used to think it was safer to sleep in her car than under a bridge. A week later, Evil Jerk returned to harass them again, this time with police officers claiming them to be child molesters. JNS, still fairly new to the area, didn't realize that the building on the other side of a thin line of trees was a private daycare center, and they had been parked there overnight. There was no real proof of any wrongdoing, and the couple was just asked to move along. The moment our nonprofit started helping them, the Facebook group had us on blast once again, claiming we took in child molesters. The story has a happy ending, though. JNS finally have a place of their own as well as jobs and are doing so much better. Their dog is as he always has been, happy, healthy, and well-adjusted. S still has PTSD from that night, and I hear that the nightmares have not completely gone away, but she is moving around so much better and learning to not be so jumpy whenever people approach her with their phone in their hand. Unfortunately, Evil Jerk is still out and about harassing those that he deems beneath him with what I'm starting to believe is his own cult following supporting him all the way. S is still afraid that he'll someday come after her and Jay again, but if they're no longer homeless, I really doubt he will. I don't think he wants to draw attention to the fact that they're a success story, and he only wants to talk about those who fail. I personally find these people who harbor such hatred for their fellow humans to be far scarier than most of my clients. Not all, but most. This third story is about someone I'll call Kid. Warning: this story has attempted sexual assault. Now, Kid wasn't really a kid, but a young adult that had become like a kid brother to me for the short amount of time that I knew him. I didn't meet Kid at my current place of work, but years ago when I helped manage a hotel. As I was talking to clients about their stories, I remembered Kid's. Kid had got some part-time work for a seasonal job that was paying for him to stay in the hotel. It's a pretty common occurrence at this hotel for that particular company to do this. One night he opened up to me, and he told me the first very scary encounter he had after becoming homeless. He was 15 and had just run away from his alcoholic father, tired of the beating and all the crap that came with it. He had no money, no friends, and only one place to go. His aunts, who lived two states away. He was convinced that he could hitchhike and walk there. A very dumb idea, especially because his aunt didn't even know he was coming. He was afraid that if he talked to her, she would say that she wouldn't take him, but that if he just showed up, she couldn't say no. Looking back, we both agreed that he was dumb for that. His first night on the street wasn't that bad, actually. He slept in a park looking up at the stars and actually quite enjoyed it, dreaming of how he could make this work and just live his life as a nomad traveling the world. The second and third nights were a bit more miserable, as he was now hungry and uncomfortable in dirty clothing, realizing just how much walking he was going to have to do to reach his aunt. The fourth night was when he truly saw how dangerous living on the streets could be. He had met a few other homeless people that were kind and gave him some tips, but all of them advised him to go back home, telling him that whatever home was like, the streets were worse. That night he had found himself under an old bridge. He had been there for maybe 10 minutes when an old man came limping up to the bridge, yelling that the kid was under his bridge and that he better leave. Well, kid was one of those charismatic talkers and had tried to befriend the old man. Just when kid thought he was out of luck and to avoid problems he was going to find a new spot, the old man then said,
"Oh, screw it. Company won't hurt me for one night."
They sat down together and began talking a bit. The old man asked Kid if he smokes weed. Kid did not, to which the old man then said,
"Shit, I thought you'd have some."
Then he asked if Kid smokes cigarettes, which again, Kid said no. The old man was clearly becoming agitated, asking if Kid had food or a soda or even money, then finally asking what Kid was good for then. Kid laughed it off and just said he was tired and wanted to get some sleep. He closed his eyes, leaned his head back, and just tried to ignore how uncomfortable he was. Big mistake. He said that he just had this really bad feeling, like some impending doom was upon him. Well, Kid opened his eyes just as the old man tried to shove his gross hand down Kid's pants. The old man was yelling something about how Kid needed to pay for being under his bridge, and then shoved Kid down. Kid fought and fought hard against the surprisingly strong old man, who was just laughing as he tried to keep one hand down Kid's pants and the other fending off Kid's struggles. Kid said the only thing going through his mind was, "Holy crap, I have to get away. This isn't happening. I have to get away." He couldn't even think to cry out for help or say anything at all. He was just in shock that this was actually happening. For a moment, he thought that the old man was too strong and there wasn't going to be any escape from what was about to happen. But finally, Kid was able to make a well-placed kick, getting the old man off of him and then run like hell. At first, he was dead set about going to the police, but technically, being a runaway, he was too afraid that the police would take him back to his father or to juvie. So instead, he just found a new place to settle down for the night. He was too scared to sleep, though, feeling like the old man would suddenly appear every time he closed his eyes. He didn't sleep well again for a long time. Kid never made it to his aunt's. Said that he thought about reaching out, but also thought too much time had passed. His dad never even reported him missing. Because he left over summer, he figured that the school probably just assumed that he just went to a different school. And they too never reported him missing. No one was looking for him. He fell into some bad crowds, started using, and had many more bad things happen. He was trying to get his life right now that he was an adult, and he even told me that he had planned to save up, buy a farm, build a house, and then find a wife and raise some kids. I thought it was a good dream. I even promised that if he ever needed a babysitter, I'd be the crazy aunt that he could leave the kiddos with. That made him smile. He said that he was clean now and didn't even smoke cigarettes or have the occasional beer any longer. I was proud of him. Unfortunately, the story does not have a happy ending. One day, he didn't come back to the hotel from work. It was strange, but that often happens with adults. Maybe he met someone. Then he didn't come back for a second night. My coworker and I wondered if we should report him missing, but we decided that we should just give it one more night. The third day, Kid's boss came by to pick up Kid's stuff. Technically, he had paid for the room and was Kid's emergency contact with permission to enter, so we couldn't really tell him no or demand any information, although we wanted to. He cleared out all of Kid's belongings and brought back the room key. That's when he explained that 3 days ago, Kid had gotten into a heated argument with his on-duty manager, punched the guy out, and then stormed off the work site. It was hard to believe. I mean, Kid had always seemed so easygoing and mild-tempered. That night, he was dropped off at the ER by a cabbie, and he had died from an OD in the hospital. They couldn't get him back. Cops were still not sure if it was suicide by OD, or if he had just been clean for so long that he no longer had a tolerance built up, so what he would normally do was just too strong. We kept waiting, but no cop ever showed up to ask questions. I guess they didn't know if he had been acting differently at home or said anything to staff to find out if it was intentional or an accidental death. Kid did often say that he thought about telling a story at high schools as the kind of motivational speaker thing to try and help any 15-year-olds that are like how he was. You know, try and convince them to reach out for help and not end up like him. So, I guess I'm sharing a story for him. I don't know what made Kid suddenly snap like that. Maybe I just want to believe the sweet kid I talked to at work and not see the ugly side that a life of drugs and crime can cause even after breaking free of that life. Maybe he was struggling with something that he never shared with me. Whatever it was, I really miss that kid a lot. It breaks my heart that things went the way they did. Guys, if you're going through something, anything at all, reach out. Get help no matter your age or where you live. Take action to save your life before it's too late. Thank you all for listening to these stories. Please remember that everyone has a story that you just haven't heard, so show a bit of kindness to the broken people. But do keep yourself safe. A stranger is still a stranger and capable of anything, no matter their life status.